Blog Talk Radio.
The New York Jets. No, I'm going to hold you to an answer on that. What makes America the greatest country in the world?
Well, Lewis and Sharon said it, diversity and opportunity and freedom and freedom.
I'm not letting you go back to the airport without answering the question.
Well, our Constitution is a masterpiece. James Madison was a genius. The Declaration of Independence is, for me, the single greatest piece of American writing.
You don't look satisfied. One's a set of laws and the other's a declaration of war. I want a human moment from you. What about the people? Why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of her paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories: number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Yosemite? Sure used to be. We stood up for what was right. We fought for moral reasons. We passed laws, struck down laws for moral reasons. We waged wars on poverty, not poor people. We sacrificed. We cared about our neighbors. We put our money where our mouths were, and we never beat our chest. We built great big things, made ungodly technological advances, explored the universe, cured disease, and we cultivated the world's greatest artists and the world's greatest economy. We reached for the stars, acted like men. We aspired to intelligence. We didn't belittle it. It didn't make us feel inferior. We didn't identify ourselves by who we voted for in the last election, and we didn't scare so easy. We were able to be all these things and do all these things because we were informed by great men, men who were revered. First step in solving any problem is recognizing there is one. America is not the greatest country in the world anymore. Enough?
July the 20th. 2012. And this is The Last Word. I'm Michael Lawson. I wanted to play that scene from the new hit series Newsroom because of what Will said. Will said that, you know, we're great as a country, but we're not the greatest country in the world anymore. And there was a reason why. Not that we cannot come back to be the greatest country in the world, but like all people in all countries through the years and through time, we have somehow lost our way. We have lost our way on a variety of things. We've lost our moral compass to do what is right. Does the need of the many outweigh the need of the few? Or does the need of the few outweigh the need of the many? And Cole, I'll be with you in just a minute. A moral compass. Now, I tweeted on, sent out on Facebook today after I had changed the whole aspect of the show today. Last night, I went with my best friend to see Batman. It was fantastic. And I want to talk about that a little bit later, but it was fantastic. It tied up everything. But the whole idea of the movie was for Bruce Wayne to find his own way. As his father said, why do we fall down? So we can get up. This is something that I believe that this country is going through. We are falling down. We aspired when we first started as a country to do the right thing for everybody. And we seem to have lost our way through those years. And then we righted the ship. We gave people, women, the right to vote. We gave African Americans the right to vote. We protected our weak with Social Security, where people would starve in the streets like they did during the Depression, where it just wasn't everything for me. Me, 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 me. We're in this ship together. This is a big ship, this country, and we need to make sure that everybody survives, or as many people as possible. Nobody is more important than the next person. Everybody offers something. Yes, there are a few that you could say that don't do that, but everybody offers something. And you know, and I heard today about, you know, we need to stop guns. We need, you know, we have a Second Amendment. Hey, you have to. You know, whichever way you want to interpret it, do we have the right to carry a gun, or is it under a well-honed militia? I don't even want to. I think that's just coloring all the real story. It's not seeing the forest for the trees. You don't need an M16 to shoot Bambi, or to shoot squirrels, or to shoot rabbits. You don't have to have 16 M16s. You don't have to have flash grenades. You don't have to have steel jacketed weapons, bullets. You know, the Constitution is there, but the Constitution also says, you know, freedom of speech. You don't have the right to yell fire in a movie theater. So there are limits that are placed on the Constitution. And we need, I think we're going through that phase where there's going to be a tipping point. And I'm afraid that tipping point, unless it's grappled right now, there will be complete gun control. So the people who are advocates for gun control need to get together with other people and see how they can solve this problem. Everybody should have the right to have a gun, but they don't need 16. And they don't need to have an M16 with 100 clips to shoot Bambi. Let's see who our caller is here. Hello? Who's this? Hello? Okay, I guess the caller hung up. Let's see here. What do we got here? The caller was there, but I don't see him now. All right, so this is what I wanted to say after this shooting that we see that happened in Aurora, Colorado tonight, last night. I was thrilled to death to see Batman. I think it was a great ending to a great series, trilogy. And you need to go out there and see it. And I understand that they have now stopped the premiere in France because of the afraid of copycats. This is terrible. We cannot be held hostage to people that belong in a mental institution or that need psychiatric help. We can't be held hostage to this, but you can go across the country. Like I'm broadcasting out of Charlotte, North Carolina. They have crippled the mental health system in North Carolina. The Progressive Party has crippled it. Most of these people that are in the prisons now, I say most, 30% at least have mental health problems. And if they didn't have a mental health problem, would not be in jail and would be fully functional in our society. But we need to separate these people, because when you put them in the jails and they're not getting adequate health, mental health treatment, they come back out and do the same thing over again. And they can be helped. But you got these criminals who will always be criminals, and they need to be in jail. So I don't know where we're at the position we are right now. But something has to give. Something has to change. And if we don't change it, we're going to go over that tipping end. People talk about, well, we need to get rid of all the guns and get rid of everything. Let's just put it fairly here. When you watch Matt Dillon and Gunsmoke, they were not allowed to carry a gun in town. So this is nothing new. Matt Dillon was based on an actual character. Wyatt Earp, when he was in charge of Tombstone, that's one of the first things he put through in town. You could not carry a gun in town. You had to check it at the sheriff's office or at the station outside of town before you came in, and you got it when you left. And we're not talking about a town of 8 million people. We're talking about a small town compared to today's society. But they knew then that you needed to have some form of control of carry. Some carry control you needed to have. They knew then. So this is not something that Barack Obama brought up. We're talking about the conservatives, Matt Dillon and Wyatt Earp and all the marshals in the West when we were moving west. They knew that there needed to be some sort of control of how you carry, how and when you carried your weapons. You are not allowed to carry a weapon in a saloon. You are not allowed to carry a weapon in church. You are not allowed to carry a weapon at parks. You couldn't do it. But today, the state and the federal government allows you to have a carry weapon where you could carry it into school. I was listening to a show today, and some character called up and says, well, you know, if everybody had took out their gun, that guy wouldn't have done anything. But that's a lot of nonsense. You're sitting there watching the movie. The man came in at exit door, threw shot fired once in the air, threw smoke grenades. The lights went out. Who were the people? What would have happened, do you think, that if you everybody in the audience pulled out guns? They would have been shooting one another. Because you would not know where the shooting was coming from. The people said they never saw the shooting where it was coming from. And some people were shot from the next theater. I believe this happened in Studio 9 that he came in. Well, people, or Studio 8, or vice versa. And the people, some people were shot through the wall because it was only, it's like paper mache walls. They were shot through the walls. Now, suppose the people started pulling out their gun in the theater where the man was not at. Can you imagine the massacre that would have went on? Or how about the, I don't know if some of you are old enough to remember the old Archie Bunker tale. When at the time of the Son of Sam killings in New York City and all the Green River killer in California, and it was really about the hijacking where there was a lot of hijackings in the 70s, and Archie Bunker went on TV for as an advocate, and he says, I have the surefire way to stop all these hijackings. Give everybody a gun who gets in this seat. The airlines should supply their own guns to everybody. Give everybody a gun, and the hijacker wouldn't dare hijack a plane. Now, you know, this is the mentality of some of these people. They're not trying to cure the problem. They're only trying to exacerbate the problem. They may think they're trying to cure the problem, but because of their own selfishness, because of their own need of having power, they would rather sacrifice the good of the public for their own naked need. And this is a problem that we have. People do not care about humanity. They only care about themselves. So, we're in a position that needs to come to some sort of reckoning. It needs to come to some sort of reckoning, because we're going to be going over that cliff where there will be some sort of government that's in office that will take your guns away. Not take them away from you, what you have already, but prevent you from getting any more. Because that always happens. When we're going on one track for so long, and so many people get fed up, they go the other way. And not just a little bit, they go 100%, 180% the other way. That is no good either. We need to come to a happy medium that is best for everyone. Yes, you should be able to go and buy your own guns, but you shouldn't need to buy one gun a month. You don't need to have 12 M16s. You don't need to have Glocks with 32 in a clip or 33 in a clip. You don't need, if you a burglar is coming in your house and you have to shoot at that burglar 33 times, you must be shooting some sort of monster, or you just can't shoot. Therefore, you shouldn't have a gun in the first place. But here we are. This is what people are going to be driven to do. Now we're going to see on television all these psychiatrists coming out, clinical psychiatrists, forensic psychiatrists, all saying, well, he showed some sort of tendency back way when he was 3 1/2, where he used to pull the wings off birds. And well, you know, that's all the world good. The problem comes down to mental health. Every one of these killers has a mental health problem. Everyone. There's nothing that any of them departed. They have a mental health problem. And mental health is a major issue in this country. You're walking down the street. You don't know the person standing next to you at the bus stop, the person standing next to you on the subway platform. You don't know what kind of problem that person has. And they don't have to use a gun either. There's a lot of people out here with mental health problems. And if there's no place for these people to get help, we're not going to cure this problem. We sell more guns. There's over 3 or 6. I think it's about, it's at least 300 million guns in the country. I believe it's closer to 6. But let's just settle for 300 million. There's at least 300 million. That means a gun for every single person, man, woman, and child in this country to have. Now, why do we need to have that? Please, let's just don't go back to, oh, well, we got to prevent a tyrannical government. We prevent a tyrannical government by getting out to vote. And I believe we had less than 3% turnout in Charlotte this past week for the runoff elections. We had less than 15% for the primary elections. You get the government that you deserve. You get the government that you deserve. This is not a democracy. This is a representative government. This is a representative government where we have to participate. They say everybody doesn't participate. Yes, we know that. That's the problem. Everybody doesn't participate. We need to have people that get on the air that tell us why we need to participate. The airways are supposed to be free to supply information. That's what they were designed for. It wasn't designed to have cartoons or reality TV shows. It was designed to get information and a little bit of entertainment out to the public. But just like on the new show, Newsroom, it's all going to hell in a handbasket. We no longer have news. Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite, Huntley and Brinkley, Peter Jenkins, Harry Reason, we don't have news broadcasters anymore. We have pretty or handsome talking heads that read copy that's given to them. We got Fox News over there that passes down information that comes from the Progressive Party or some talking head like that slob Rush Limbaugh. And they repeat it, regurgitate it. You can tell if you have a half a brain, listen to the words that they say. They're the exact same words that come out of Limbaugh's mouth at 12 noon. The exact same words. I mean, come on, people. Smarten up. This is not about news. It's about how we can bend your understanding of the news to the way we want you to perceive it. Because it's all about winning now. It's not about playing fair. It's not about getting along. It's about being number one. And number one is yourself. Number one is yourself. And most of these people only think of self. We don't have the Edward R. Murrows that will talk about the Republican or the Democratic issues and say how wrong or right they are. We have someone who's a commentator, not a news person, a commentator, who's going to give you opinion news. Opinion news always has to have a slither of truth in it to make it palatable. Just a sliver. To the ill-informed, that's enough to make them believe. That's enough to make them go jump out a window or jump off a bridge because, you know, it's possible. It's possible to have an out-of-body experience. Unbelievable. Let's see who our caller is here. Hello, caller.
Yes, Michael Evans. How are you?
Michael Evans on the left coast.
And we're trying to keep it that way.
Have you were you listening to anything I said? Did you get a chance to?
I just caught the tail end of it, the outer body experience. were you discussing Mitt Romney?
Well, before we get into that, I was discussing the tragedy of Aurora, Colorado, and the shooting, and how I don't know if you had a chance to hear to see the new HBO series, Newsroom.
Not yet.
Okay, it is a, if I say so myself, a fabulous, fabulous script and story. I'm from the old school. I like the Raymond Chandler dialogue, the overlapping dialogue, this dialogue like you normally speak. You know, today's story, everybody finishes a complete sentence before the next person starts. Well, that's not reality.
Right.
And the storyline is about a commentator who's somewhat revered, like an Edward R. Murrow or a Walter Cronkite, but time in the past, a couple of years in the past, he went off the deep end and became and sold his soul to be like a commentator, a talking head like we have on television now, where it is all about ratings and not about the news. And he comes to a reality that, you know, screw that. I need to go back doing the news. And he just didn't decide this on his own. He had help with the same person that got him to go into that funk, brought him out of the funk. And he leads one of the greatest monologues, it's about 7 minutes long, that I have ever heard in television history is the opening scene of Newsroom. So if you can DVR it, Demand TV, I'm sure you can get it on demand. Just listen to, if you haven't got time, the first 7.5 minutes monologue. And it will tell you what this is all going to be about, but it will also bring up information. He's sitting there with, to give you a short synopsis, he's sitting there with two other newscasters, supposedly, you know, like CNN, Fox, and MSNBC. He's sitting in the middle. You got one that's supposed to be left. You got one that's supposed to be right. And he's supposed to be, you know, like maybe the CNN person, and he's supposed to be in the middle. But he's never really given that sort of idea to anyone that he was left, right, or center. And a question came up started by a college campus, and the woman and one of the students says, "Is America as good as we say it is?" In so many words. And everybody says, oh, yes. The liberals say, yes, oh, yes, and it could be better, but we do this and do that. And the conservatives say, oh, yes, we're America's Stars and Stripes. We fight for everybody. And they ask him, and he says, I like the Jets. Because it takes place to be up. And he says, no, you're not going to go to the airport without answering this question. So he says, answer the young lady's question. Who said, well, I thought I did. He said, yes, I agree with both of them. And he said, oh, you're not going to go along with that answer? Then he went in on this tirade. He says, no, we're not. We're not. And he says that you out there, you're from one of the worst generation. Whenever you go into a voting booth, if you ever go into a voting booth, this will help us. So he says that we used to be great. But we're 49th in infant mortality in the world. We're 108 in some other thing. We're the leading country in the entire world when it comes to the death penalty. We kill more people than almost every other country together in the entire world does. We've got over 300 million guns, one for every woman, man, woman, and child. You know, he goes into this whole thing. He says, you know, where have we gone? Where is our moral capacity has gone? And so the thing is that they you know, people say, well, we now, and getting back to the gun, the shooting in Colorado, we need to get rid of guns, some people are saying. Well, you know, I am not, and I am a liberal, I am not for getting rid of guns, but we need to get rid of the rules that say you have a right to carry a gun inside a church, inside a school, in a park, in a classroom. I mean, if you ever watch any Westerns or you know about Westerns, looked at history, Wyatt Earp did not allow you to carry a gun in Tombstone. He cleaned it up. Matt Dillon, who was based on a real character, did not allow you to carry a gun in Dodge City because they knew that people, especially in bars, if they had a gun, get drunk, would start something. So there needs to be, you know, there's a need of the many outweigh the need of the few. And if we don't change or compromise or try to change these state and federal laws where you can carry, where you are permitted to carry a gun anywhere, we're going to reach a tipping point where people are going to get so dissatisfied that they're going to go completely the other way and have nobody carry guns. Because it always happens. You always balance out sooner or later. So, but how many more people have to be killed before we come to some sort of realization that something has to be done?
Well, it's a good question. Sort of an interesting conclusion you draw. What we really need is some common sense approaches to gun ownership. There is no reason for anyone to own a semi-automatic weapon. You're not going to hunt with it, and there's really no purpose for it other than to destroy something, whether it be people or animals or whatever. The NRA is such a powerful lobbyist group that makes an effort to shame anyone who challenges them in any way. They really stand in the way of any sort of responsible gun ownership.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember a few years ago, I think it was in Virginia, a policy that you couldn't buy more than, I think it was one gun a week. And the NRA opposed that.
That was a question I was talking about before you came on the air. Why do we need to buy one M16 a month? Why do you need more than one M16 anyway? Well, I use it for hunting. Does Bambi have a flak jacket on?
Right. And that's more of our hypocrisy, because if you were to buy, say, chemicals that you could use to make an explosion, that would be reported, and law enforcement would look into it because you're probably up to some sort of no good.
Right.
But if you're stockpiling M16s, there isn't that same concern, although there obviously should be.
Right. Well, the thing is, though, you can buy these M16s and these other high-powered rifles, but you can also buy Glocks with a 32 clip. If anybody's breaking in your house and you need a gun, that's one thing. But if the person is breaking in the house and you got to shoot at them 32 times, you need to either get practice on using a gun or you got an invasion coming in your house.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need a clip with 32? This man that shot the senator, the congressman, Gabby Gifford, I mean, he shot 27 times. And the only reason why they got him because he ran out of ammo. He was getting ready to reload.
Right.
I mean, this makes no common sense.
So you can say a responsible gun policy, yeah, it might not have prevented that from happening, but it certainly could have curtailed the damage.
The other people wouldn't have been killed. I mean, they got away from the revolvers because after six shots, you had to reload. So then they changed the revolvers to these quick reloading barrels where you just snap it in and snap it out with the bullets already in it. But they said, that's a better gun that has 32 clips in it. I mean, 32 bullets in it. I mean, it makes no sense. There are plenty of ways. I'm from New York City, didn't grow up with a gun, never saw a gun until I was like, oh, God, I don't remember how old, maybe 18. And the thing is that there was no need. I lived next door to a house full of police. there was 8 children. 6 were policemen. 1 was a bus driver and 1 was a nurse. And never saw them with their gun on. Never. I shouldn't say that because the youngest one, he was a foot patrolman. The rest of them were detectives. I saw him when he first went to got graduated. He came home with his gun on. I saw that. But he became a detective also. I mean, there was no need. You don't need a 32 bullet clip. And that's the thing that's so, you know, they say, well, if you take that away, you'll take something else away. Well, nobody wants to take anything. And that's the other thing. What has President Barack Obama taken away when he has become president as far as gun is involved? Didn't they say he was going to do that, take away everybody's gun?
Oh, it's not that he's done it. It's that he's going to do it if we reelect him.
Oh, but what happened when he had the control of the Congress for the first 2 years? They say he had control of the Congress for 2 years, and he didn't get nothing done. Well, wait a minute. Wasn't he, that was one of the things he was going to take away, the guns, when he first day he was in office?
Right.
So now they push that down the line again, that he's going to do it the next time he gets in office.
Yeah, and they've developed some real paranoia around that. And it's just so unrealistic. I mean, you know, even Democratic legislators are under the control of the NRA. So, and I mean, certainly to take guns away would be absolutely impossible. And even to develop a responsible gun policy is next to impossible.
Well, it is, and you know, now I was listening to what was the former governor of Pennsylvania, Rendell. And he says, now, a major gun state, and he was against all guns. He was for gun control. He was elected the first time he ran by 10%. The second time he ran, he was elected by 12%. And the third time he ran, he was elected by 21%.
Mm-hmm.
So the thing is that he said gun owners want to do this. It's only the hierarchy in the NRA that doesn't want to do this, and they speak the loudest. He said gun owners want gun control. They want it. He says, if they didn't want it, I wouldn't have been elected. He says, I was overwhelmingly elected the last time I ran, and they knew I was for gun control. So it's not the gun owners that see this. It's these brash loud mouths that go in the air who want everybody to have a gun. Because, you know, it's just like the these chicken hawks. You know, I mean, the Rush Limbaughs of the world who preach nothing but go kill them. Go get them and kill them. Go to invade that country. Kill those people over there. This man, when he had his chance, he had a pimple on his rear end, so he couldn't go. I mean, he did. It's just Mitt Romney ran away to Paris, France, for a 2-year stint under the guise of religion. His 5 sons, under the guise of religion, also went to France. But yet they will talk about how much we need to be strong, and we're for the federal government, and we're for the American flag. But they never, as Colonel Nathan Jessup says, I don't give a damn what you think. Grab a gun and stand post. These people never stood post.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of these people in the Boehners and the McConnells and the all these people in the Republican Party, the loudmouths that want gun control and want us to fight and kill people all over this planet, none of them have sent their kids in the arms way or sent themselves in the arms way. None of them. But us liberals, you know, we go and do it. Don't wanna, but we go and do it.
Mm-hmm.
We go and do it. Now, the thing is that that's, I'm going to have a, and oh, before I leave this, I wanted to, how is out there in California, how are they treating the mental health problem as far as funding?
Well, as you may know, back when Ronald Reagan was governor was when we first started having issues with funding for mental health issues, and he started putting mentally ill people back on the streets, which, of course, has exacerbated the homeless problem over the years. But because of the overall attack on – or well, not attack, but the overall budget, obviously things like social services and education have taken the biggest hit.
Well, and see, I was noticing it here in Charlotte, and it started really ringing my bell when, because my daughter is a psychologist, and she was working at the jails here in Charlotte, and she had every one of them had to be processed and go through her. She was there over a year. And she said that she saw the same 30% of the people that were processed into the jails in Charlotte had mental health problems and shouldn't be there. They belong in an institute. We don't need any more jails. We have plenty of room. But when you're using 30% of your facility because someone has a mental health problem, and they're not getting or seeing anyone to help them, you're only exacerbating the problem.
Well, exactly. And that same situation exists here. You have a significant number of inmates who are suffering from mental health issues or substance abuse problems, and they're not getting adequate treatment while
right.
they're inside. And then there's virtually no programs, particularly with the increasing budget cuts, to help them readjust once they get outside.
Well, the thing is that here the Progressive Party legislature is cutting it, wants to kill it all for health care, mental health care. I mean, we found out in where was it in Arizona that the governor's son-in-law or brother or something is the one that's ahead of the private prison system. And
mm-hmm.
we found out that these private prison systems have the worst records of escapes and the worst records of taking care of prisoners in the entire country. But yet that's what we want to do, because we want to contract out everything we can. And the main thing there is that's why they want to get more conservative judges on the bench, so they can get more people incarcerated, so they can make more money.
But yeah, let's talk. You raised a very good point here on the privatization of prisons. If you think about this, it's an oxymoron. Privatizing the prison system. There is no profit to be made in a prison unless the taxpayers are handing money over to
that's
the owners of the prison.
Right. That's right.
So, there's no supply and demand here. It's just robbing taxpayers, really.
Well, but there is a supply and demand. If you could get conservative judges on the bench, instead of giving somebody, we'll fine you and we'll give you a warning, or we'll fine you and the next time we'll put you in jail. Right now, it's hang them, throw them away the key, send them to jail.
Right.
That's what, and so they're working to get those people elected to the bench, so they will have a supply for their jails, and then and it's just like contracting out. When I worked for the Weather Service, what they did was, they said, okay, we're going to contract out all the weather forecasters at the airports. Okay, now the weather forecasters at the airport, pilots want to fly. They don't like to fly instrument. They like to see what they want to see visual. So you always had a National Weather Service weather forecaster at the airport, and he would take visualizations of the sky go on the roof, look at the sky, and he could tell by looking at the sky how high those clouds were. And then we also have what they call a rotating beam solometer that was an instrument that would tell him exactly how high the clouds were. But the thing was that he said, no, we are going to save money. This is what Reagan did, and we're going to contract out the weather forecasters. Okay, that's fine. Contract out the weather forecasters. They didn't fire those federal forecasters that were at the airport. They had to make room for them. So what did they do? They sent them back to the main office, and they put in private contractors doing the weather. But the problem was that the U.S. government is the only one that can do weather forecasting because the U.S. government is the one that's liable if the forecast is wrong. Not the private weather, not AccuWeather. They are not liable. Only the U.S. government is liable if they get the forecast wrong and it is a plane crash. If the weather forecaster say, well, the clouds are at 17,000 feet, and the pilot comes in and you see that they're at 5,000 feet, and the pilot runs into the ground, they're going to blame the National Weather Service for that, not AccuWeather. So what would happen is that when the private contractor went on the roof and said, he looked at the sky, he said, well, I think it's about 5,000 feet. So the pilot have a direct line to the weather forecast. He would call his tower. The tower would then call out to the weather service and say, give us the cloud heights. The private weather forecaster, taking the place of the national weather forecaster, would have to call the National Weather Service and say, how high are the clouds? He could not give them a reading because he wasn't authorized to. So therefore, they had the weather forecasters back in 20 miles away, not over the airport now, given the weather observations of what the clouds were over the airport. I mean, so this is the state. So what they did was they were now paying somebody else to do the same service what the actual federal worker was doing while he was there. And they said, this, we contracted out. They actually didn't contract it out. It's like a shell game. You have the P under this shell, and you shifted it to another position. The P was still under the shell. You understand what I mean?
Right.
So the thing is that these private contractors are only there to collect money from us taxpayers because we don't understand the shell game.
Right, and I think we should take to calling this, we should call it a privatization tax or a corporate tax.
That's correct.
Corporate tax. Because what it is.
That's right. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. Because we are now paying someone to do something that they're not really doing when we're talking about the weather service, because they all they could do is tell the tower what the temperature and the humidity is and the dew point, and they read them off the dials.
Mm-hmm.
So you have someone sitting at the airport who's supposed to give direct communication to the tower how high the clouds are, but he can't do it. He has to call to 20 miles away where the home office is and get an actual weather service forecaster to tell you what the clouds are, how high they are, and you know, he can't do it because he's not over the airport, but he's the only one authorized to.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting screwed, and we're paying for that private contractor because the government is paying him. Of course, they're paying him less than what the regular forecaster is getting because he's not getting any health care, he's not getting any overtime, he's getting minimum wage, you know, just like the policemen and firemen in Pennsylvania, who were cut down to minimum wage, $7.25 an hour, a policeman and a fireman and a sanitation worker. I mean, is this the absolute stupidity that there is? I mean, when are people going to say, hey, look, we're not getting what we pay for? But some of these people don't believe that we need it. Some of them believe that we don't need it. But they need it when it happens. Because they're going to be the first ones complaining. Now, that's one thing. Now, we have the Romney fiasco. Now, last night I went and saw premiere of Batman here in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
It was fabulous. I loved it. Now, the problem is Bane and Bane. One of the Banes tells you exactly what he's going to do and is going to do it. And the other Bane tells you what he's thinking about doing and then etch-a-sketches it and does something else.
Uh-huh.
One's a destroyer and the other one is a destroyer. So you got two destroyers, but one lies to you. I mean, that's the only difference.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a connection as Rush Limbaugh wants us to make, that DC Comics came up with Bane in 1993 because he knew that Mitt Romney, who was going to own Bane, later was going to run for the presidency. So that's why this movie came out. I mean, it's completely ludicrous.
It is, but we could spend hours trying to figure out how Rush's mind works.
Well, a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Now, what about Ann Romney? And you know, I hate to talk about the wives of politics of politicians, but how can you imagine if Michelle Obama would have said you people? In any interview?
Yeah, I give wives a lot of leeway because they didn't. It wasn't their choice to get into this.
No, it wasn't.
But clearly, she was put out in front on this issue to put a better face on it.
Yes.
And they either didn't give her any talking points, or their talking points were full of crap. And then for her, but because when somebody first told me about this before I actually saw it, I said, well, her saying you people, she probably just messed up her talking point. And she was probably supposed to say, you know, the Obama campaign.
Right.
But when I actually saw the clip, I thought, this is all just random stuff. I mean, it doesn't even sound like she has talking points.
She don't. She was talking off the cuff. She didn't have, they just put her out there.
And
you're right.
And now I suspect when she said you people, she meant the media. But
yes.
Still, I mean,
yes.
You're right. Had it been anybody on the left, it would have been an outrage.
Oh, absolutely. And hold on just a moment there. Hold on. Recognize that theme. And
hey,
I want to welcome
to
the conversation the chair of the Cabarrus County Democratic Party and our resident doctor, Ms. Grace Leem Galloway.
Hey, Michael. I am sorry I called it late. I just had
that's
got tied up with other things, and you know how that goes.
I have Michael Evans on the phone. When's the last time you saw one another?
Yeah. Oh, a while, right? Forever?
Yeah, what happened to Michael? I just lost him. Oh,
no,
gee whiz. I just lost him. I don't know what happened.
Okay,
I guess you weren't able to hear what we were talking about.
Well, I heard a little bit about Bane and Bane. I heard a little bit about that. But I'm really distraught about the shooting in Colorado.
Well,
I
started out talking about that today on the show, and what is so bad about this whole thing? I don't know if you had a chance to see the new HBO series Newsroom.
No, I have not.
Well, you need to go to Demand TV and just watch the 7.5-minute opening, which I believe is one of the premier opening dialogue scenes in TV history.
I should
and
do
it
that.
Will set everything where you need to be. And the main thing was the question, you know that question conservatives always get upset about, are we, the country, is the country a good country? I forgot how they word it. An exceptional country. Are we exceptional? And that's what it was. It took place in a college setting, and a young lady asked Will, the star, you know, are we exceptional? And he's a newsroom. He's a news personality, you know, like MSNBC, CNN, and Fox.
Mm-hmm.
And he's supposed to be like the CNN person because, as you find out later, Jane Fonda is in it, and she owns the network. Anyway, so the MSNBC person who's far left says, oh, yes, but there's a lot of things we can make better and this and this. And the conservative says, oh, yeah, we are the American way. We do everything right. We're never wrong. And when they asked him, he says, I like the New York Jets. So the guy wouldn't let him get away with that. He says, no, you got to tell us. So finally, he broke down. He says, no, we're not exceptional. We're not. And he started rattling off all these figures that we were 49th in child infant mortality across the world. We lock up more people in all the countries put together. We got over 300 million guns, one for every man, woman, and child in this country. What are we doing here? And you, as a college student, when did you vote last time? If you ever go to a voting booth. Anyway, the whole thing came, what is our moral character? What is our moral character? And, you know, we got these guns. You know, I'm for guns, but, hey, does a person need to have 12 M16s?
Does really?
A person need to have a Glock with a 32 clip? I mean, you need
it's
for
semi-automatic.
Right.
I know.
Is someone going to break into your house where you're going to have to shoot them 32 times? Either you're a bad shot or they got a whole gang with them.
I know.
I mean, you know, so what's the purpose of this? You know, back in the good old days, Matt Dillon and I'm going over some work, some ground that I already covered, but Matt Dillon and Wired Earth, you weren't allowed to carry a gun in town. You had to check it. They knew back then that everybody should not carry guns in bars and churches. You couldn't carry a gun in church. You had to leave it outside on the post or on your horse. You couldn't take it into schools. They knew back then. So why are they all of a sudden so surprised that people are saying, you know, we shouldn't be carrying guns in nightclubs and bars? I mean,
well,
you know,
they're actually allowing that in some areas, that it is okay. They've actually passed those laws that it's okay to carry guns.
Right.
In bars.
The state and the
here,
federal government both.
Here in, yeah, and here in North Carolina, you can take a gun to the park. Anyway, did you see what Michael Bloomberg of New York City posted?
No.
He demanded to know what Obama and what Romney are going to do.
Oh,
about
yes, yes,
this.
Yes.
Hey, idiot. That's a really stupid, stupid statement. Really stupid.
Like,
because
they're really
going to
do something. They're really going to do something about it, right?
What can they do?
Yeah.
What can they do? They can put out position papers. They can put what can they do? There isn't. She said, I want to see their plan.
Your
really?
Call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message
wait.
System.
Oh, what
happened? 0497585 is not available.
What did I do? I lost you?
Please record your...
Oh, let me call you. I just lost her. Let me find out what happened here. I just lost Grace. Let's get her back on the line here. I don't know how I lost Grace, but I lost Grace. Let me call her back. Oh, Grace, I'm sorry. Call back. I'll call you, Grace. That'd be good. Let's call her back. Okay, here, Grace. I lost Grace. I'm trying to... Just hold on 1 minute, ladies and gentlemen. Let me call up back Grace. Okay. Let's see if I can get her back.
Hello?
Okay. I don't know what happened.
I have no idea what happened.
I have no idea.
We got
a lot of thunderstorms here. And it might have been my fault. I don't know. But the lights, everything is flickering. Anyway, so you were saying about Mr.
Yes, about Bloomberg.
Yes.
Idiot Bloomberg. He's. I want to see their plan. You know, that really is a stupid statement to make. First of all, even if they did come up with a plan, how in the world is that going to be implemented? Doesn't everything have to? It has to be a major deal. It has to go through Congress.
That's
and
right.
In case he hasn't noticed, the NRA controls Congress.
Well, that's right. So it's not going to be the president's plan. It's not going to be the president's plan.
No.
It's got to be a congressional plan.
That's
he
right.
may want to do it.
To
he may want to do
right.
it, but he forget about doing it. That ain't going to happen.
He can't. He
so, you
cannot
know,
do it.
So what is the purpose of Bloomberg saying that?
His posturing. This is called political posturing.
But is he going to run for president? Is he going to run
for
president?
I think what he's looking at is, because you know how they're talking about the Republican convention being a brokered convention?
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
it could be.
Yeah,
if Ron Paul has his way. If Ron Paul has his way. But I it might be brokered not because of Ron Paul. It's just that so many people just don't like Mitt Romney.
Right.
And
they're talking about Jeb Bush.
Well, but, you know, I don't know.
Scary.
But here's the thing. I don't think nobody has ever won in a brokered convention. The person who's been broken, they have never won. And I think Jeb Bush is smart enough. He comes from a smart enough family, not including his brother, but a smart enough family, his younger brother, your older brother, that he would say, you know what, I don't want all this fanfare. I'm not going to do it.
He doesn't
can talk Jeb Bush all they want. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Right. So, you know, I just think that they're just whistling in the dark now, because they went down this train line. They went down this train line and it's coming to an end, and they do not know where to go from there. They don't have a hotel room. They don't know where to go. we took the train ride. We got our bags packed. And wait a minute. Do we want to get off here? No, you don't have to. I mean, no, you don't want to get off here. But you got to, because it's the last stop. And you're not going back the other way. This train is going to the yard. So you got to get off. So,
well, hey, did you have Walter Rogers on earlier?
No, he's not on. He hasn't been on yet. He's not coming on to 4:30, I think.
Good, because that is one brave man right there.
Well, hey, listen, we got together before I went on vacation. I was on vacation, I took a 2-week vacation. We were down in Charleston, as well as my wife's family reunion. It was also my anniversary, also my youngest daughter's birthday. So I got away from everything. My back didn't go out until I came back. So everything was fine. But we talked about this before I left. And that was one of the things that Walter took care of when I was gone. But I brought it up. I said, look, this has got to be done. And we're going to talk about what we're referring to in just a minute. But I have one person we need to get in here. And hello, who's this? Kim?
Kim Ratliff.
Kim Ratliff? Ratliff, I should say. Who is running for? Who is running for who? For what?
Mecklenburg County Commission at Large.
I'm very glad to hear from you, Kim. And how are you doing today?
I am doing great today, Michael. How about you?
I'm doing fine. You're also on the phone with the Cabarrus County Chair, Dr. Grace Lean Galloway.
Okay. Pleasure to speak with you, ma'am.
And
hi, how are you?
I'm great.
And I just need to ask you a couple of questions because I know you are rushing to go to some other engagements.
Of course, always.
Always. What is the first thing that you would like to see done if you become a county commissioner in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, North Carolina?
Well, one of the first things, one of the biggest complaints that I've heard on the campaign trail as I've met with a lot of small business and a lot of entrepreneurs is the building permit process or the business license process. There's a breakdown in that, and sometimes the process can go anywhere from 30 to 90 days, and it causes some businesses to even go out of business. So I want to look at that particular process and see what can I do to help move that along, to help get our business owners to keep them working or to get them working.
How does the county commission help minority businesses?
Well, we can help them secure different kind of loans and grants.
Okay, but is there a mechanism to make sure enough minority business get a piece of the pie?
Well, that's what Kim Ratliff is here for. It is there, but not everybody knows about it. So Kim Ratliff definitely wants to get the word out to minority business owners, including women and people of color, of some of the opportunities that are available so that they know when contract time comes around what they need to do to get their name in the hat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Grace, you have anything to ask our candidate?
No, I actually want to commend our candidate for taking the lead in this particular area because it's you know, we have to level the playing field, and of course, the playing field has not been leveled. It's never been leveled, and it's only from being proactive like this that we are able to level the playing field. You know, it's tough to say, hey, you know, minorities don't have any skin in the game. Well, yeah, we don't have any skin in the game because you don't let us.
That's right. And you know, well, one of the main things that I want to ask you, Kim, is how has the Larry Kissel debacle affected your campaign, or has it affected your campaign?
It has not affected my campaign. I'm actually not in Mr. Kissel's district currently. I have been for so many years, but with the new redistricting, I am not in his district.
Okay. Now, that's another thing that I wanted to...
I'm keeping up with it, but it has not affected me at all.
Okay. Now see, the thing is that how are people, because I find it very difficult as the chair of Precinct 4, which was in the 8th District and now in the 12th, I mean, I receive calls almost every day from people that don't know where the hell they vote at or what district they're in or where they're at. They don't know what the hell is going on. What is wrong with the Democratic Party apparatus that has not gotten this cross across to the various people in their district.
Well, to be honest, to address that, the Board of Elections actually sent out new voter registration cards, so everyone would know where your precinct is now, where you go to vote at, who are the people that are currently governing you. So it's a matter really of people reading their mail. And, of course, if you have misplaced that, you can always go onto the Board of Elections website and get the most updated information. They updated that, I want to say, in May. So everyone should be able to log on to a computer, go to metvoe.org, put in your name, and it will show your current information.
Well, I received my new voter registration card, but I am still under the impression that there is still a lawsuit against this redistricting.
Last I heard, I thought it was dropped. Maybe I've been so involved with my campaign that I missed that, but I thought it was a done deal that the redistricting was official.
Grace, do you know anything about that?
We are going to be voting along the new district lines, but they're still, looking. It hasn't, but I don't know if it's been dropped, but my understanding is that we're voting along new district lines and we're just kind of holding our breath to see what the heck else is going to happen.
Okay.
To be honest, I don't think anybody really knows the true answer.
Well, that's true because we know that the state Democratic Party doesn't know which end is up. So, that's... Tim, how can people get information on your candidacy, and how can they contact you?
Well, my phone number is 704-502-8984. My email is votekimratliff2012@gmail.com. And my website is Kim for Meck County, and Meck is spelled out M-E-C-K, for is F-O-R, County is C-O-U-N-T-Y, and that's KimForMeckCounty.com. That's my website. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter. I am the visible choice, so pretty much wherever the constituents are, Kim Ratliff is either there, she just left, or she's on her way. But she is somewhere in the mist. That's why she's the visible choice.
Well,
I would encourage people to check out my website, get involved with my winning campaign. Many of you know I was the top vote getter in the May primary.
Mm-hmm. And let's see. There was one other thing I wanted to give us three quick points that you're going to try to see that can be completed in your first term as a county, as the at-large county commissioner?
Well, we would definitely hope that more jobs are brought to the area where different industries and companies that are interested in making Mecklenburg County better, making our roads better, making our schools better, whether it means building a school or whatever, but companies that are interested in our communities and not just moving here and bringing their employees with them.
Right.
And, of course, along with that goes increased funding for public education, which covers our public schools as well as Central Piedmont Community College. And then I want to address the needs of the community, whether it be a library need, a park and rec need, a mental health need, just whatever the needs are of the community. I want to be more involved in the community. I don't want to just be a government official that hides behind a desk and is not accessible to the people, because I am of this community. I'm a native Charlottean. I've seen what Charlotte can do. I've seen what Mecklenburg County can do, and I know that we can do better.
I want to thank you. And when do people need to come out and vote for you?
Early voting starts October the 18th. My name will be on the ballot. It's Kim Michelle Ratliff, your candidate for Mecklenburg County Commissioner at Large.
I want to thank you, Kim. I know you're busy, so I will let you go.
Thank you so much, Michael, and to your listeners for having me on your show today.
Thank you.
All right, have a great weekend.
That was Kim Ratcliffe, Mecklenburg County Commissioner at Large, your visible choice. Now, Miss Chair, the thought at hand.
Yeah.
What the hell is going on with Larry Kissel?
Well,
give me a break.
His campaign says that let me rephrase that. People from his campaign have said that he has to do this because the district has moved more to the right. My question really is, well, if you're going to keep moving more and more to the right, that really means that you are going to be less and less voting for our best interest, right?
Mm-hmm.
For us. Yeah, mm-hmm. He's going to be representing us less and less and less and less. So this makes me wonder, you know, who do we have? Do we have a Democrat? Or who do we have? I mean, what do we have to represent us? Now, back in 2010 when he voted against the Affordable Care Act, we were all really incensed. Do you remember that, Michael?
Oh,
I remember that. Yeah.
That conference call.
We had that conference call.
I remember
in
that.
2009 it was. And so when 2010 came around, we were really incensed. And we were told, oh, hold your nose and vote for him, vote for Kissel, because he votes with, you know. Well, guess what? Guess what his percentage is now? 73.1. So he actually went down. He went down in voting along the Democratic agenda. So if I had trouble voting for him at a 96%, what makes you think that now 73.1 is going to be good? Because it seems to me that we've rewarded him for bad behavior, and he's gotten worse.
Yeah. Well, you know, did that 96% include the post office
Amings
and roads?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I ask everyone, and I ask minorities in particular, but I ask every human being, how long are you going to let this person or any person keep slapping you down, okay, knocking you down, giving you crumbs while he takes the whole cookie, and you're supposed to be grateful for the crumbs that you got? You know, if I said this to a person of minority, how long are you going to let the white man keep you slapped down? Okay? You'd understand. Mm-hmm. You'd understand. Mm-hmm. How long are you going to let the white man keep you down on the plantation, mm-hmm. okay, and keep you down on the farm, so you can't see Perry? How long? How long are you going to say, well, okay, I know, but he's good to me 10% of the time, or 70% of the time, or 50% of the time? Why can't he be good 100% of the time?
Well, you know, even Robin Hayes was good to us 45% of the time.
There you go. There you go.
He wasn't 100% against everything we wanted.
No.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, why couldn't we have a Robin Hayes do the same thing? Yes, okay, yeah, all right, in my estimation, he won his race because of Mecklenburg County's 33 precincts that are no longer in his district, which made up probably about 20% of the vote.
Well,
so
no.
Now
here in the last election, here's what happened. He lost Cabarrus by about 9,000 votes, mm-hmm. but he picked up 10,000 in Mecklenburg County. Mm-hmm. So now he's lost the majority of Mecklenburg. He's going to lose Cabarrus.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to lose Cabarrus because he's managed to tick off the majority of the people Well, there's, you know, I shouldn't say that. There's a bastion of support that he has, and it's the same people that say, well, 73% is better than zero. But, you know, those are the people who have never been stepped on.
Right.
Those are the people who have never been subjugated, okay? For those of us who've had to fight for our rights, it's not acceptable.
Right.
So, and this is unfortunate, Michael, but there are young black people who don't understand.
Yes.
You cannot. You know, like Nancy Shaka says, I could have helped a whole lot more people, freed a whole lot more people, as long as once you realize they were slaves.
Right.
Okay, so we've got the young black people now who don't get it. They just don't get it. They need to be talking to the people who fought for freedom. They need to be talking to the people who marched with Martin Luther King. They need to be talking to the people who had to have a test to take an exam. Okay, mm-hmm. Who had to pay a poll tax of one form or another. They need to talk to those people and understand. So what I say to the young black people, study history. It's important. You know what they tell me? I don't need to be a damn historian to know that 73% is better than none. Really? Really? You missed the whole point.
That's right.
You missed the whole point. You lose the battle, but you win the war.
That's right.
Okay? So maybe we might lose the seat. I don't know. But just like we took it back from Robin Hayes, we can take it back again.
Oh, absolutely.
And this time we take it back for the real Democrats.
Well, and see, the thing is that you have these the Larry Kissels of the world who we in Mecklenburg County before him, the DCCC pushed this guy Tim Dunn, a Marine, on us.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want Tim Dunn, so we got Larry Kissel, and we pushed Tim Dunn out. We told DCCC, you can't come in here and tell us who we're going to back. And then the same thing happened with Elaine Marshall when she was running.
Right.
They wanted to back this other guy. I forgot who his name is. And we said no, and we backed Elaine Marshall. So now they're doing the same thing again. And I give a contribution to the DCCC every month. Well, I'm telling everybody right now on the air, they need to stop their donations to the DCCC. I'm stopping mine.
I stopped mine a long time ago, and DNC called me the other day and asked me, you know, if I would do a monthly donation of a small amount of money. And I said, absolutely not. And I told them precisely why.
Yes.
I told them precisely why. Yes.
Well, that they have $1.1 or $1.2 or $3 million that they're supposed to be giving to Larry Kissel when they could give that money to another representative in another state even who is close to margin of winning that could help that person win. That's what they need to do.
Yes. Yes.
They need to give that money to somebody else that can win because we do not want that man representing us here in North Carolina because we might as well have a Robin Hayes. And the person Larry Kissel is running against is a complete loser. He's a loser. So Larry Kissel might win despite of all this. But it won't make a difference to the people in the 8th District, if it's a Republican or Larry Kissel. So therefore, take the millions of dollars that you are going to contribute to the Kissel campaign and give it to someone that you know will help the people and vote with his president. When you have a representative that says, I am not going to support the president, and I may not come to the convention. Well, duh. If you don't support the president, why the hell are you coming to the convention? I mean, that don't even make that's, you know, that's convoluted talk. You're thinking about not coming to the convention. Well, duh. I think you should be not coming. That shouldn't even be a thought. That shouldn't even be an afterthought. How can you be a Democrat and not support your own party standard bearer. This is complete lunacy. So, but one of the things that which really people need to understand is that this is not just this one thing with Larry Kissel. He voted against the president, his own president, on the four major policy legislations that this president wanted to fulfill. I mean,
in the key issues, he has voted against, and that's, I don't know, it's so hard to explain to people, but sometimes you have to draw the line in the sand. Sometimes you have to say, no, I am not going to be stepped on anymore.
Right.
And, 73% of being good is not enough.
I mean, I didn't realize it was that low. I mean, that is just completely
73.1.
Irresponsible.
Went from the 90s to 73.1. And so, you know, we voted him in, and we held our noses, voted for him in 2010, thinking that you know, let's show him our support, because as everyone said, we have to show him that we support him so that he will understand that he'll vote our way more often, right? Mm-hmm. No, it dropped over 20%. It dropped over 20%, and that some people have to understand and know. And,
I mean, that's amazing.
Anyway,
that's amazing
it
has dropped that. That is amazing. Well, I just it's something that needs to be brought out more, and I'm waiting for Walter Rogers and Antonio Blue to come on the line, because the Black Leadership Caucus has just announced last week that Antonio Blue is going to
be the write-in candidate. When they do come on, I mean, the Cabarrus County Democrats and the Cabarrus women and seniors are having a breakfast tomorrow. I know Antonio knows about it. I sent him an email, but I don't know if he can make it tomorrow or not. But if he can, and I would love for people to be able to see him, visit with him, and I think Kissel's office is going to be there too. I'm not sure. I don't know. We leave it open to everyone. Our keynote speaker is Elaine Marshall, and Bill Fazen's going to be there.
Oh, is that right?
Well.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So you should come. Oh. It's at 9 o'clock in the morning. You should come. It would be...
Where's it going to be at?
It's going to be at Troutman. You know, Troutman's on Warren Coleman. Mm-hmm.
What's that address?
1388 Warren Coleman Boulevard.
Warren?
Yes.
Is that double N?
Warren. Mm-hmm.
Warren Coleman?
Warren Coleman. Mm-hmm.
Boulevard. And that's in where?
That's Concord.
I think I've been there once. It's a big place, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it wasn't Troutman one of the candidates one time for...
Yeah.
Party? Yes,
yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Warren Coleman Boulevard. Absolutely. Okay, and that's at 9 p.m.? 9 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I will see if I can.
So, yeah, come if you want to.
That's great. That's going to be a breakfast?
Yes.
Okay. All right, that would be fine.
Yes.
And that would be perfect. Yeah, I'll see what I can do about getting out here tomorrow. And it depends on what I have to do with my daughter, because she's trying to get her car. So, well, it's my car. I have to get the things fixed.
I understand, Daddy.
Please. Yeah, right. Yeah, you're right about that. Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to talk to you about is I want to congratulate G.K. Butterfield on his statement about Larry Kissel.
Yes.
I mean, did you happen to read that?
Yeah, I didn't read it, but somebody told me about it.
It says here. He says here, it's disgusting to me that the Democratic member of Congress who was elected with the votes of thousands of uninsured people would choose to vote against health care reform, G.K. Butterfield said. And now he has pledged again to repeal health care reform. That's even after the Supreme Court has found it to be constitutional.
Right. No, see, he originally voted against health care reform, health care,
yes.
Right? And then
yes.
And then he said, but he would not vote to repeal it. And so he voted against repealing it. This was back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And now he says, you know, he voted to repeal. So when he was asked, when you call his office and you ask, why is he doing this? What you get from his office is, well, he's just living up to his promise. Well, which promise? The promise to... which promise?
The Etch-a-Sketch promise.
You know what I mean? Damn. Yeah, so...
He is as much of an Etch-a-Sketch artist as Mitt Romney is.
I know.
And the thing is that this health care that could help as many as 30,000 uninsured children in this district... as well as 110,000 uninsured adults, many of them live in minority communities, according to the House Energy and Commerce Committee. He voted against them. Now, this is just completely, as G.K. Butterfield said, it's a disgrace, and it's disgusting. And,
yeah.
You know, it's just a – and J.K. Butterfield is in the house with him. So I guess they're not
sitting
down having any
I guess.
Tea and crumpets anymore.
I guess.
Or any less.
Yeah. But G.K. has always been ahead of the game. You know, he's always stood up for what is right. He's never compromise his values, and that's the whole thing. You know, when I hear them say, well, he has to change his vote and he has to vote the way he votes because his constituency has changed, here's my answer to them. My answer to them, are you a politician or are you a man of principle? Are you voting politically or are you voting on your principles? Okay, if you're going to lose your daggum seat, go out with a bang, having stood up to your principles. That's all I say. That's all I ask. I don't ask for very much more.
Well, you know, the thing is that how are we going to evaluate his answers? What have been the answers that he has told us why he has done this? What does he say?
Right. Because his constituency has changed.
But you see, his constituency
in order to in order to keep the seat Democratic, he has to become more conservative. Well, if you're going to become more conservative, then you know what? You're not Democratic anymore.
Well,
you
that's correct. So how can he say one thing and then say, "Oh, well, I'm doing it because of this," but his support of the Democratic ticket has dropped over 20%. I mean,
right.
How's that even reasonable?
Right. That's why it makes no sense. It makes no sense. And, you know, I think if you ask Walter and you ask Antonio the same question, I'm so proud of Antonio for stepping up. I am so proud of him. I know that so many people would have just said, nah, they don't want it, it's a sensitive issue, yada, 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 you know? And I am so proud. I'm so very proud of Antonio.
Well, I just got a text here that Walter is calling in a minute. So I guess, I don't know if he's with Antonio or not. But the thing is that there is no legit, and, you know, as far as the 8th District Democratic Board, he would never meet with us.
Yeah.
He would never meet with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's see. I think this might be. Let's see who this is on the phone right
good
now.
Evening.
Hello,
good
Cole.
Evening, Michael.
How
good
are
evening.
You?
It's Walter Rogers. How are you?
I have Grace Leem, Cabarrus Chair, on the phone also, Walter.
Hello, Grace. I'm looking forward to seeing you at the breakfast tomorrow morning.
Oh, hi, Walter. I am looking forward to seeing you, too. And let me tell you something. I don't know if you heard, but even if you did, I just wanted to tell you how proud I am of you for having stepped up, taken the very, very, very sensitive issue, and just saying, you know, no, enough is enough. I am so proud of you. I'm so proud of the Black Leadership Caucus. I just... I don't know what else to say. Thank
well,
you.
Grace, I appreciate that so much. But it's really not about Walter. It's for all those people in that Penn County that have been neglected for the last 4 years.
That is exactly right. It is exactly right. You know, as Harriet Tubman says, I could have freed more people if I could have convinced them they were slaves.
You know that's right. You know that is right. I had a couple of newspapers to ask me this morning, why was Antonio Blue running? Can you imagine being asked that? I said because the low wealth people of the 8th Congressional District have been forsaken. Mm-hmm. And we were kind enough to bite our tongue and vote for Congressman Kissel a second time if I'm really not deserving it. But then I also realized that the main thing is the issues that he is addressing and the way that he's addressing them and the fact that he is neglecting the most dedicated people to the Democratic Party.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, those, you know, exactly. But then, Grace and Michael, when you tell the person who is the head of your party, I am not going to support you for re-election, when they look and see that you have not supported the agenda as a Democrat, and then you say, well, look, just to show you all how serious I am, you're having the national convention in my backyard, and I don't think I'm going.
I don't think I'm going, right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What is it?
it's really, you know. But now let me tell you something else. I think the congressman really thought that after this redistricting by the Republican Party that it was all over and that the African-American percentage of electorate had gone from like 32% to like 19%.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have to really worry about him. But what about the fact that it's an issue that's still in court and there's a possibility, and we have our fingers, toes, nose, and everything else crossed, that this situation will not be cleared early enough for the 2012 election.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if that's the case, Grace, I put it to you, like I was asking Kim that, if that's the case, how do we vote?
You vote along the new district lines. So go ahead, Walter.
I was thinking that if the case had not been resolved in federal court by a certain time, that they would vote based on the old district lines. Because, you know, the United States Board of Election has already ordered the election boards across the state to go on and set it up for that. But if the federal court does not say yes, and that may include, well, the Justice Department has already given an opinion on it. But, hey, this thing could go all the way to the United States Supreme Court and then bounce back. Is that right?
Well, you know, I'm under that same thinking, but the problem is, though, if what are they going to do with everybody with the new voter ID cards? I mean, people are confused now. Half the people we got to vote don't know where they live.
That's true. The problem is exactly who's on the ballot. They're going to be voting in the same place. Their voting place doesn't change, but the ballot, again, you vote. My understanding.
If it remained what it was, you're absolutely right, Grace. They would vote where they've been voting, and the ballot would remain the same. The candidates for the same districts would remain the same. All of that, nothing would change.
Yes, see, we don't have a decision yet. The thing. Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and if we don't have a decision by November, what do we do?
Oh, we'll have to have a decision long before. There's a cutoff date, Michael, and I have no idea what it is. But I'm sure that somewhere somebody has a cutoff date. But even more important than that, we need to talk about who the candidates are going to be. So if whether we change it or not, we'll know who the candidates are and we'll know who we need to write in for and who we need to leave alone. Because if you could call yourself a Democrat and you do not support the Democratic agenda, you do not support the Democratic president, are you sure you are a Democrat?
Yeah. Well, I gotta tell you that. I got had some people tell me that I was out of line in my comments about how I would not endorse Larry Kissel. I was told that the plan of organization states that I must support the candidate, and I said no.
Why is it you must support him, but he must not support the president?
That was one of my comments.
The thing is, you must support him, but he don't have to support you.
That has been the problem all the time. You know, people want you to unselfishly support whoever the Democratic candidate, irregardless of how they vote and if their vote is in your best interest or not. But now, you know, Grace, I have a personal opinion, and then I have my position as an officer of the Black Leadership Caucus PAC. And they are somewhat different. So if it wasn't the Black Leadership Caucus PAC that said it, maybe it was my personal opinion. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I do have the right to a personal opinion the last time I checked.
Yeah, and it's still America,
The thing that I want to get across is that we – you know, vote for our representative. This is not a democracy. This is a representative republic. As a representative republic, the people of the district should be able to vote for who they want, and not the DNC telling us who we should vote for.
Well, the DNC is the one holding the convention that the congressman said he didn't think he was going to, right?
That's right.
DCCC is the one that has given $1.3 million to Blue Dog Democrats who've not supported the Democratic Party. Is that right?
That is correct.
So now maybe we need to pull up the sheet and look under there and see who's under there.
Well, we know at least one or two that's under there.
Yeah, who's making that decision and what criteria are they using that they have such a bad reputation? You know, I pulled something off the internet this week that somebody sent me that was six or seven congressional people who had received that $1.3 million that on a regular basis have voted against the Democratic Party or the party platform. You know, so there's something. You can't buy people loyalty. You can't buy people loyalty, and they know what they want to do, and either they're going to do the right thing or they're not.
Ain't that the truth? You're absolutely right with that.
But the other main thing is to look at those bills that the current congressman of the 8th Congressional District has voted to the detriment of the people. He can get paid $100,000 a year to go to represent us, and he goes there, rode on the president's back, not on his coattail, on his back to get there. Then he gets down and say he makes his own decision, irregardless of what the people think.
Mm-hmm. Well, Walter, I we have a few minutes left, but I want you to do a short synopsis of how we got to this point and picked Antonio Blue. Now,
Michael,
let me ask you a question. How many write-ins do you need?
You need 250.
250.
We have a, yeah.
You're
I think so far we've turned in probably 12 or 1,500 just to get 250. We got a lot of them are going to be turned in probably the first of the week. We don't have any problem with the number that we need to have.
Okay.
We'll probably have well in excess of probably 1,000. And we have not worked hard because it was it is not a difficult task. But the prerequisites are that you have to turn in your petition to the state, and that petition has to be first certified
right.
by the counties in which the people reside. And we pretty much passed that. I had one person to turn in 150 today that will be sent to their county. But that's not a problem. I think just about every county in the district has turned in some names. And
okay.
once that everybody turns theirs in, they'll turn over to the county certify them, send them back to the candidate delivers them to the State Board of Elections and does the other stuff that he needs to do. So there's no problem with that. We're in fine shape. There is no question but that we're going to meet whatever prerequisites need to be made.
As my first question was, so how do we get to this point to choose Antonio Blue?
How do we get to this point?
Yeah.
Well, when the congressman said he would not support the president and his would not endorse the president and his reelection bid, and would not endorse him, he did not think he would be going to the Democratic National Convention, which is in his backyard. And you take that into consideration along with his history of voting against the Democratic Party when it came to major issues involving low-wealth people. The 8th Congressional District Black Leadership Caucus decided it will not be in their best interest. It will not be in their best interest to support him. We're not upset with him for doing what he's doing. It's no more than we really expect out of him.
Right.
But we say, that's fine. We're not going to support you. And when it hit the wire, it went AP, and I've got calls from all parts of Florida, parts of New York, everywhere. Because there are a lot of people that have the same problem that we have right here in the 8th District of North Carolina, but for some reason they just have not stepped up and say this is enough.
Yep.
I've had enough. I've had enough. This is where the rubber meets the road. We're going to do something different.
Okay. We have another minute left. You have some closing thoughts, Grace?
No, I just agree with Walter, and it's like I said, how long are you going to let somebody continue to step on you, not even say sorry, but say and not even say I'm going to do better next time, but keep doing worse and worse and worse, and you've got to keep supporting him? The answer is no. Line has to be drawn. Line has to be drawn. Lose the battle, win the war.
All right. I want to thank Dr. Grace Leem Galloway. And, Walter, you have a closing comment?
Michael, I thank you so much. I just want to tell everybody who have not heard it, the 2012 election in the 8th Congressional District is about the write-in. Forget the straight ballot. You don't get the president anyway. You vote for the president, then you vote for the write-in, and then you vote for everybody else individually. So we're hoping at some point we'll be having workshops all over the district on how to do a write-in as opposed to a straight ballot. And thank you and Grace so much for having me.
I want to thank both of you charming people, and you guys are really putting the rubber on the road. I want to thank you, Grace, as always, and I'll talk to you next week. And Walter, as a matter of fact, I hope to see both of you tomorrow. It is so dark outside.
Yeah.
It's like it's midnight. And
all right.
It's afraid of poor rain out here. So
yeah,
okay.
Well,
we'll go.
Definitely see y'all tomorrow.
Yes,
okay.
Ma'am. I'll see you
Thanks,
guys
Michael.
Tomorrow. Talk to you.
See you, Grace.
Right. Thank you, Walter. Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
I want to thank everybody, and this has been the last. word. And next week we're going to talk about Batman. George, I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to get you in today. But, hey, I know I'm going to talk to you after because I know you saw it today. I saw it last night. I loved it. Everybody, go see Batman. Check those guns at the door, please.